Hey guys, do you like heavy metal? Do you like video games, comic books, movies, theme parks, or even cool TV shows? We've got the place for you. Metal Geeks. Time to rock out with your geek out. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek, Dave, and George. Geek it out, fellas.
Welcome, everyone, to episode number 135 of the Metal Geeks podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Kerry the Metal Geek, along with...
Brutal Dave.
What's up, Brutal Dave?
135, huh?
135.
Aren't we also commemorating another milestone?
This is a milestone week, actually, but I think what we... We're not all here tonight. Let's get that out of the way. George, motherfucking Tripsis, is not here tonight. He's off work doing a work event. So this is actually the week that we're putting this out. It's the 5-year anniversary of this show.
Wow.
So I want to do something a little bit special with George here. We're going to bring a couple people on, maybe a couple of special past hosts, maybe. We're trying to work out some logistics just for some cool stuff, but... Yeah, this is the actual week of our 5-year anniversary when we decided the first horrible episode came out. It's gotten much better, maybe. Not really, but yeah. But yeah, so when George is back, we'll plan a lot cooler celebration than, hey, it's 5 years. To replace George for the week, we brought in one of the only... geeky metalheads that I know that is my partner in crime on the on MSR cast. That's Sean the Metal Pigeon.
Hello, everybody.
For tonight, you're Sean the motherfucking pigeon.
You're the motherfucking pigeon. we're gonna say
you is that is
we're
that...
not doing George hates metal. We're doing Sean loves metal.
Yeah,
we're gonna try to find something you don't like.
There's plenty of stuff I don't like.
So welcome to the show, man. It's been a while since you've been on here.
Yeah,
you can geek out on some
it's
of
been
the
like
things.
Over half a year, I think, since I've been on Metal Geeks.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's time. Just no talking about Arrow, please.
No. You know what? I don't even watch that show anymore.
All right. Welcome back to the show, then.
And I feel great about it.
What have you been watching? Since you are a special guest tonight, what have you been geeking out on TV?
For some, I've gotten to that phase where I just wanted to, started subscribing to HBO Now for Game of Thrones, and they have so much stuff on there that I'm like, oh, I've been meaning to, I wanted to watch this. So I watched Veep. I watched Westworld. I'm almost finished with Westworld. I have like 30 minutes left, and I still don't know what's going on in that show.
What do you think of Westworld?
I love it.
I'm 4 or 5 episodes into it. It's a great show.
The first 2 episodes, like, it moves slowly, and I'm kind of like, all right. There's something about it that's addictive, but... I have no idea what's going on, and I'm still wanting to watch the show. And I have a vague idea of what could be going on, like different timelines and stuff like that. But I don't
know. It's all going to be a dream at the end.
If they do something like that, it's going to piss me off. I'm actually kind of struggling right now trying to visualize where geographically Westworld could be. Because at first I'm like, they must have built this like next to the Grand Canyon or taken possession of the Grand Canyon area and built it there. Now I'm starting to think that maybe it's not even like on Earth as we know it itself. And they have not shown anything to support that, but I'm just thinking like, how could they possibly have a place this big, you know, without like a Truman Show type, he comes to the end of the bubble and like walks through the door, you know, that kind of thing. So like maybe it's another planet or something, you know, West World or something. So,
well, they take a train to get there, right?
Yeah. That's the weird thing. They take a train. But then, like, to service the actual Westworld, they take elevators.
Yeah.
So that boggles my mind. It's weird.
Well, maybe the train. Yeah, I don't know. It's one of the. It's like Lost. You know, you don't ever know what the hell's going on. Even when they explain something, it opens up more questions.
Right.
So, but those type of TV shows, they're meant to be that way.
Yeah.
They're meant to keep you sinking and keep you back, keep you watching. You know.
And the creator is Jonathan Nolan, who did Person of Interest.
Oh, I wonder why you like it so much.
Layered into different things and stuff, and you weren't sure if things were real or not. So, yeah, it definitely has that kind of
thing. I still need to watch that show because you hyped it up so much.
Oh, it was so good.
And I always thought it was just a, you know, a horrible, stupid, boring crime procedural.
That's what I thought it was, too.
It was a show that had no business ever being on CBS. It should have been like a Netflix type thing or like an HBO type thing, but... Anyway, I mean, other things. I mean, like I watched which you were just watching when I came in, Glow.
Yeah, which we're episode 7 or 8.
One of the most charmingly funny shows I've seen in a while.
I really like Alison Brie, but yeah, she's sort of annoying in the show.
Is she supposed to be?
I know, but it's. I don't know if she's really playing that character really well or. Yeah. Jesus.
And Mark Maron's great. Also,
Mark Maron's fantastic in the show.
I finished Maron, his standalone show. And that had the most satisfying ending of any show I've seen in a long time.
I haven't watched that yet.
It's ridiculously funny. And season 4 is dark, but it's super funny.
What I've been watching on Netflix, I'm trying to finish the second season of a documentary now. It's not as good as the first one.
I'm trying to remember if I've watched the whole second season. What's the last... What?
I am watching the second. It's the two-parter about the movie producer from the. He gets like a movie studio like that's owned by like some.
Okay, I don't think I probably haven't finished the second season then. Okay. I know I've started it though.
It's not as good as the first one. I'll say that much.
I don't know the episode about the chicken and rice restaurant in like
that is pretty
that
good.
Was
yeah,
amazing. That one was really good.
That was like heart wrenching too.
Yeah,
like oh my God.
Yeah, like because it's so. I mean, it's the kind of thing that they've been doing through the whole show, and it's just this lampooning of whatever the culture is that they're looking at.
Huh.
But then all of a sudden, in the last like few minutes of the show, it turns really heartfelt and like. Like it's doing something.
Oh, all right, I need to check that out. It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. Yeah.
Have you ever watched any of those?
No.
You know the premise of it?
No.
It's a fake documentary TV show hosted by Helen Mirren.
Yep.
And oh, okay. she introduces these documentaries throughout like film history, right? And it's all Fred Armisen and Bill Hader. Right. and they take like real documentaries and lampoon them. They take like the filming style, the production, and like all the costuming and everything. Like they do it all up, and most of them are based on actual documentaries.
I think they all are from what I know.
Yeah.
I haven't seen all the originals.
But right, of course, but yeah, but that's what they do. They take
documentaries,
and they're pretty funny. Like some of them aren't obviously as good as the others, right, but when they're on, they're
Fred Armisen, and Bill Hader they're in every single one. It's created by Seth Meyers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Directed and videography, all that stuff is done by this guy Alex Buono. And if you check back, maybe a year or two ago on this show, I did an interview with that guy.
Huh.
Because for a work event when I was working at the camera store, we had a booth set up at this event that he was teaching, like, because he does all the live action stuff for SNL. So all the interstitial and all the old, Lonely Island videos and all that kind of stuff. So I interviewed him. It was like right after the first season of this came out. And I actually hadn't seen it yet. If I'd known that I was going to interview the guy before, I'd seen the show already. It's a great show.
It is.
Wow. All right, check it out.
Yeah.
I think Fred Armisen is really funny.
Yeah, I love him on Portlandia.
Yeah, I love Portlandia. I love Portlandia because I feel like I know all of those people.
Is that show done? Are they finished?
No, I think they're still making them.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've seen the last season.
Did you see the episode with Glenn Danzig?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Did you see the episode with Michael Nesmith? He was like one of the mayor's dad. He was going to take the money away.
When was that? Was that in like?
I feel like I've seen that.
Like the most recent,
maybe the last couple seasons. It's not one of the earlier shows.
Okay.
You guys seen? Oh, you know what?
Yeah, episode number 83. It's an evening with Kevin Smith geekery. It's when I played the interview with Alex Buono.
Okay.
And we talked about documentary now and SNL and all that good stuff.
Huh.
You know what else I'm watching on Netflix? Trying to catch up on the last season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Because I never watched it when it was live.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit better when you can actually plow through it the whole season, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I have a feeling a lot of those shows would be better that way.
Yeah. Because I think that show was notorious for, hey, here's 6 episodes. We're going to take a break now. And you're like, well, I'm not interested anymore,
Yeah.
You forget what's going on.
You guys watch that Bill Nye show on Netflix?
I haven't watched it
yet. I have some of it, yeah. Not all of it yet.
I got to tell you, I'm disappointed. Like, there's something off about that show.
I've that's kind of the impression I've had. That's why I haven't really jumped on watching it yet, because I've gotten the impression, like, we all love Bill Nye. Bill Nye was a part of our childhood and all this kind of stuff.
I love him, and he's kind of preaching to the choir with me with all the stuff he's talking about, but the feeling I get from the show is that he's kind of, that the studio audience they have there, it's all a bit too much preaching to the choir, and they're just sort of his congregation. And the stuff that they have on the show, all the high-tech sets and all the weird stuff, and where he's not actually doing science, he's kind of talking a lot. And then the whole concept of Bill Nye saves the world, it's like, the ego on this show is out of control. You guys need to check it.
I disagree. I like it for what it is. It's not a science show, of course. It's just.
Do you feel like it's like an ego thing on the part of Bill Nye or on part of the show itself? Like
the show itself.
Okay.
Like, they need to be, their audience needs to be not the choir. They need to be skeptics.
I think you're looking at it in the wrong way. It's more, look at it more as a talk show, like a late night talk show.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of premise and setup it is. It's, they just, you know, they're bringing people on to do, you know, science stuff instead of, you know, a band or whatever. And they have the interviews and stuff when they talk about a certain topic.
Yeah. It just, it feels way different from the original thing.
Well, you know, you can't just recreate the original.
No, but I mean, why not? Why couldn't they recreate the original? You know, like that would have gone over better than this. Because I mean, having Carly Kloss talking about going to the whole climate change thing, where they're building the dams in some part of Europe or something, like systems to control floodwaters and stuff. It's like, that would be great if Bill Nye was over there on location talking about that stuff instead of her. Mm-hmm. No offense to Carly Kloss. It's just, I don't know what I'm supposed to get out of this show. I watched like 4 episodes and I was kind of like, I'm not finishing this. This is not good.
So you guys been playing anything recently?
Not really. I've been too on the move. I have actually watched a handful of movies. I haven't really been playing much.
Did you get to play a lot of classic games recently?
I did. Well, actually, no. I got to watch a lot of other people play classic games.
Right.
I was at Classic Game Fest with Geekazoid last weekend in Austin, which is a wonderful show put on by Game Over Video Games.
Not a sponsor, but they can be if they want.
Hey, you know what? I don't even care if they're not. They're a great organization.
Yep.
So they put on a good show. It's one of in all honesty, it's one of the favorites.
If I didn't have plans over that weekend for something, I actually would have gone. I'm definitely planning to go next year.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So I mean, it delivers on what the name says. It's all retro video games. They're like on the back of their vans, it says from Atari to Xbox, and it's everything. It's excuse me.
Maybe we can get let's do it. Let's try to get a panel going next year. That'd be fun.
Talk about video games. They have some paneling.
Yeah.
We could talk to them about it. But like
paneling on the side of their van type of panel. Some of the 80s stuff going on, 70s. Yeah.
Just your face is an 8-bit.
Right. I'd be cool with that.
But yeah, it's cool. It's everything. It's everything video games.
They have bands performing and stuff.
They have bands who come and do video game related music, either by like, you know, employing kind of chiptune sounds and what they do, or like heavy metal bands that play like metal arrangements of video game music that you'd recognize or whatever, and hip hop groups who, you know, rap about playing video games. And
there's 19 bands.
Was there?
Yeah, that's what the website says.
This year they had the music and the vendor hall in separate rooms. And so I actually didn't hear any of the music this year. Like I could, you know, hear the vibrations in the walls or whatever, but I didn't actually listen to anything this
year. How many of those 19 bands you think are metal bands?
I know at least a good handful of them are.
Yeah, you know what's weird? Because even like a band like the Mini Bosses, who I do enjoy, but that's not music I'd want to hear all the time, even as a metal fan. Like the idea of metal or a metal interpretation of video game music, it's only slightly interesting to me.
I have to be in the right mood for it.
I guess I have to be in the right mood for it. It has to be something that's like, I don't know.
It has to be songs that are meaningful to you that you remember.
Right. Yeah. So it has to be, one, something I'm in the mood for, and two, it's got to be, from games that I have like a close connection to.
I could listen to
like
heavy metal versions of the Castlevania songs all day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they really lend themselves to that.
Yeah.
Mega Man stuff too. Maybe.
Mega Man stuff is great for metal covers.
And maybe some Ninja Gaiden too. Mm-hmm. But these are all games I played growing up.
Right.
And that's what my mind's going back to. Like, I didn't get to really play Zelda that much growing up, so I don't really care that much about it. Which is, you know.
Dave, you're mentioning is you've seen some movies recently. How brutal were they?
One of them was particularly brutal and not in a good way.
I saw a brutal movie.
At home, I actually ended up, I finally saw the last Star Trek movie that came out last summer. I don't know why it took me so long to watch it. That was the one prior. This was Star Trek Beyond.
Beyond, okay, that's right.
And it was, I'll just briefly say, it was of this generation of Star Trek movies, it was probably my least favorite. I didn't dislike it. I just felt like it was my least favorite so far. But I felt like what carried it is what carried a lot of the original Star Trek movies, which is the characters. The characters do a really good job. I feel like all of the actors who are playing important roles, like they really did their homework. And I've felt that way since the J.J. Abrams, the first J.J. Abrams movie, that the actors have done a really good job of capturing the essence of the characters that they play.
Was this the one with Khan in it?
No, that was the last one. That was Into Darkness.
Oh, I didn't
Khan
realize.
Was Cumberbatch. Cumberbatch. Yeah. Cumberbatch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't even realize they did a third one.
Yeah. Directed by James Lynn.
Oh, yeah. Fast and Furious. It was written by
Simon Pegg. So... it was cool. It was kind of,
I'm sure you can find it on HBO
it,
now.
It felt like a long Star Trek episode. Mm. It never felt like a big movie. It just felt like a long Star Trek episode.
I thought the Cumberbatch one was awesome. That was just a great movie. Even whether
I liked it too. It got a lot of shit.
Really?
It did. It got a lot of shit, but I liked it.
Yeah.
I know one of the things that people complained about is that they did a switch with the Khan dynamic, because now that we're in a new timeline, they're having to deal with Khan in an entirely different context.
Right.
And so they did a switch for Kirk and Spock at the end.
So which movie do they have to go save in this new series? They're going to have to go save the whales.
Hopefully the next one.
I'm looking forward to that. That was Star Trek IV, right?
Yeah, that was Star Trek IV.
One of my favorite
Again, like, the story on that movie is ridiculous. Like, it's terrible, but it's a really entertaining movie to watch because the characters are so good in it.
And it's one of my favorite Star One songs completely. Song of the Ocean is based on Star Trek IV. Yes.
Probably one of my favorite parts of that movie is Chekhov running around 1980s San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
Asking strangers walking by where they keep the nuclear vessels. And like in Cold War era San Francisco, this Russian guy running around. It's one of my favorite parts. I think it's hilarious.
I was never a big Star Trek guy. Like, I never really got the series or anything. But, I mean, I did watch the movies growing up, and I enjoy them for what they were. But I was never a big Star Trek nerd.
I'm a recent Star Trek nerd. I wasn't one growing up, but I've become one. So.
What got you to change?
Finally sitting down and just giving it some
time.
Is it
the movies or the TV shows that got you to actually...
Well, I would watch Star Trek The Next Generation from time to time growing up.
Yeah.
But I wasn't like a regular viewer, and I wasn't like really, really into it. It was more... wanting to give it a shot because from recognizing its cultural impact,
okay,
and being like, I really need to give this a go. So I decided several years ago I was going to start at the beginning of the original series and just kind of start you know, rolling with it. And I've gotten into it as a result. There's still tons of material that I have not worked through yet. Lots and lots of material I haven't worked through yet.
But what else have you been watching recently?
Watch that. I watched The Void on Netflix, which I was really excited for, and I finally got a chance to watch it. And
I've heard about that recently.
I really liked it. It was not a perfect movie by any stretch, but I really liked it. It's very Lovecraft, which I was anticipating, which is one of the reasons I wanted to see it. But it's very, a lot of it. It's kind of a throwback.
Yeah.
It's kind of a throwback movie, but to me, it doesn't feel heavily nostalgia based, right?
We talked about this last year.
Yeah,
we saw a trailer.
We watched the trailer.
My mind just put the two together. I'm like, yeah, I wanted to see this.
Yeah,
it's on Netflix now.
Yeah, it's on Netflix now. And like I said, looking back at it, it definitely is kind of a 80s horror throwback movie, but it's not banking heavily on nostalgia. It's not trying to do that in a way that's like, hey, remember this? Hey, remember that? How does it, it's its own thing, but it's making its own thing using a lot of techniques and ideas that kind of came from that era. So like there were parts of it that were like, to me, that were just like, obviously this is the thing, right? Some of the monster effects, and it's all practical effects stuff like that. And they were amazing. The sculptures and prosthetics and everything they made were really fucking cool. It was gory as shit. These horrible extra dimensional beings, these horrible mutated corpses and shit like that. It was, disgusting and fantastic. So there's these like,
fantastic.
It was, there was, like I said, there's very strong Lovecraft elements, strong John Carpenter's The Thing. There was Hellraiser elements to it.
So you avoid it. Don't avoid it.
Like I said, it's not the perfect movie. It has problems. There is, some of the performances aren't fantastic, but I felt like in a world full of terrible schlocky horror movies, this one did a lot of things right. So kudos for The Void. I enjoyed it.
And
so
you
it seems to have been very polarizing. A lot of people seem to have either like really loved it or really hated it.
And you saw Valerian recently.
Valerian the other day.
Should we wait for George to talk about that more?
Well, George talked about it a little bit last time, so I guess I can have my piece.
All right.
At this point,
I haven't seen it yet. So
Valerian is a movie that should be seen but not heard.
That's what I've been told by other people too.
Oh my God, it is painfully bad. The dialogue and the acting is fucking awful.
Wow.
Dane DeHaan.
I never liked that guy.
Every time he talks, I was cringing. I was like, oh God. Fuck,
he ruined that. He was like the worst part of that Spider-Man movie.
I never saw that one. But like the movie is beautiful. The intro to the movie is fantastic. And based on the intro, I was really excited for the rest of the movie because they do this montage of like humans reaching out into space and building the space station
while they're playing Space Oddity.
And they play David Bowie's Space Oddity. And so first you get like the Americans and the Russians shaking hands across the space station. And then over time, more and more cultures start adding
and
to
then
it.
Aliens.
And then the aliens start coming in and adding
to it. So when I went and saw Spider-Man Homecoming, they played the first 5 minutes of that at our showing.
And based on that 5 minutes, were you excited about the rest of the movie?
I'm like, it looks great. I want to see that.
That's the best part of the movie. From that point, it's kind of downhill from that point on. It's amazing to look at. And the whole reason I wanted to go see it was because of the visuals. Because, I mean.
But Rucker Hauer's in it, right?
For like 10 seconds.
Really?
Ooh.
Yeah. Rutger Hauer's in it. And he's like he gives the only like good performance of anybody in there, obviously, because it's Rutger Hauer. And he does good, but he's in and out, and that's it. But I wanted to see it because it looked like, this was a movie that must have been fun to be a concept artist for, because it's just like, whatever the fuck you want to do.
Yeah.
Just whatever. And the monsters and the aliens and the robots and the ships and everything were really cool, but the story and the dialogue was painful.
It looked like the version of Fifth Element he wanted to do back in the day.
Kind of, yeah.
Basically, it's like the movie equivalent to Guild Wars.
Guild Wars.
Just like high concept art, insanely great concept art. Like, cool world and nothing in it. Just the most boring game.
Oh, my God. And Dane DeHaan, and I don't remember her name, Kara.
Yeah, from Suicide Squad, right?
Yeah, she was in Suicide Squad.
Enchantress or whatever.
She was slightly less terrible than Dane DeHaan. But, God, it was
pedestals,
bad.
Pedestals, people. When you're not very high on a pedestal, you can do better than that.
So yeah, my advice is, if you feel like you need to see Valerian, it's worth, like I said, it's worth seeing, but not hearing. So wait for Netflix, watch the first 5 minutes with the David Bowie, and then hit mute and
cool.
And then you're good.
What do you think the problem is? You think it was a director's problem. It was Luc Besson. He was like just trying to get all this shit out there.
Maybe
didn't have a cohesive movie. Or
I don't think. I mean, there's the story is
because based on a French like
it's
comic
a comic
series,
book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like the story is not real strong. Like you can guess what's going on within the first 10 minutes of the movie. I mean, they set it up and just based on the setup, you're like, oh, okay, I know where this is going. So there were no surprises in terms of story, which in and of itself isn't a problem. That, you know, there's plenty of movies where you know exactly where it's going, but you still have a fun time on the way.
And you drove there, right?
Yeah.
Did you have your babies with you?
No.
Okay. But you saw Baby Driver, right?
I did see Baby Driver.
Right, let's talk about a good movie then.
Baby Driver was phenomenal.
It's fucking great, isn't it?
Yes. Have you seen Baby Driver?
No.
You know about it?
No.
As a person who likes music, if you're somebody who when you're describing yourself to somebody, you're like, oh yeah, and I like music. If that's like a defining feature of your personality, go watch Baby Driver.
Okay.
The movie it's brilliantly. I can't even say the word. It's brilliantly cut. Why can't I say that fucking word?
What's wrong with you?
I need a drink. I said that if I don't usually make these kinds of predictions, but if Baby Driver doesn't at least get nominated for best editing, I'd be very surprised.
So the movie is edited to the beat of the music. So the music is choicefully picked. Everything is perfectly done. Okay. So the movie, I mean, it's
someone
amazing.
Told me, maybe you told me about
it. I think
this.
It was probably me.
Yeah, okay. I need to go. Is it in theaters right now?
Yes.
Yeah. I heard it. Someone described it as an action musical.
Okay. I can see that.
And so it's not like song and dancey, you know, but it's the premise of it is that the main character is a young guy who has tinnitus. And he's this like amazing badass getaway driver, and the tinnitus distracts him, so he listens to music constantly, like 24 hours a day. Okay. He's listening to music because it drowns out the hum from the tinnitus, and it helps him focus. So whenever he's driving, it's always everything is happening in time with whatever it is he's listening to.
Nice,
right? And other non-driving related stuff happens throughout the movie that's timed with whatever it is he's listening to at the moment.
And it has a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
It's pretty good. Hmm. But yeah, so he's doing these jobs for Kevin Spacey is kind of like this kind of criminal boss who puts these teams together to do these heists or whatever.
Yep.
And he's trying to get out.
Oh, okay.
Is the story. Yeah. So
if you're a fan of like any of the, you know, Cornetto trilogy stuff, it's a little bit different than that, but it has the same sensibility, I think.
Hmm.
It's like an American version of one of his British movies in a way. You know
worth
what I mean?
Going to see in theaters?
You wait for. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Go see it.
Because I would recommend that anyone who is waiting on going to see Dunkirk, no, go see that in the theaters.
I have not seen it yet.
Go freaking see it in the theaters. And make sure you don't make the same mistake I did. Go see it in the IMAX.
Should I see Dunkirk or Valerian?
Dunkirk.
Or The Dark Tower.
Dunkirk is one of the eeriest war movies you can possibly imagine.
So go by yourself and...
Because of the way it's actually... There are parts where it's terrifying.
Yeah.
And then there's just you feel uncomfortable the entire time you're watching the movie. And I realized what it was immediately when the movie finished. I'm like, it's the fact that, like... And you haven't seen it.
Not yet. Okay? I'm interested in it.
Spoiler free, but I mean, basically the way he shoots the movie... is the antithesis of how most war movies are shot, where it's fast cuts and fast editing. Everything in Dunkirk's very like wide camera, very like sometimes the camera's stationary and you'll see action unfold in front of you.
Mm.
And then there's just like a lot of weird things that like it's eerie just to see soldiers lined up on the beach and they're just kind of like standing still lined up, like, you know, they're waiting for the boats to come in, you know, the premise of the movie, they're waiting for rescue. But there's almost this fatalistic vibe going on throughout the entire movie where everyone's just sort of waiting for death, and it's imbued in the people on the beach, and it's imbued in the way the film shot, and it's just I don't know. There's some kind of weird, and you know, a lot of the movie takes place over the ocean anyway. So the shots are very expansive and cinematic, and the, even the battle sequences are, you never really get this like claustrophobic sense of like if you watch you know, the Pacific on HBO, where they have the beach invasion scenes or any of that stuff where there's like fast edits, a lot of bullets flying. It's different than that. It's just a weird but really brilliant movie. And I can tell why, like when I read reviews of it after I watched it, and everyone's like, the critical reviews are like, oh, it's very cold and stuff. It's very cold and distant in tone. It's like, I think that kind of is on purpose, and I think they did that, and I think it actually helps the movie.
That's what war is really like.
Yeah, well, I mean, at least
not that I know, but at least
that's what this situation was like.
Yeah.
Like, they definitely got the feeling of like, this is the worst, like, if you want a movie that compiles the worst ways to die, in my view, like, this is the movie. It's just, what's the worst awful way to die? Go see Dunkirk. It's definitely in there somewhere.
It has a 93 on Rotten Tomatoes.
I think
you hear some of the, speaking of Rotten Tomatoes, you hear some of the movie studios are trying to fight Rotten Tomatoes scores, saying that it's not fair to their movies.
That's bullshit.
You know what I say to that? Make better fucking movies.
Exactly.
One of them was Valerian. I think they're bitching about that.
Well, it's terrible.
Then, no, it was the Emoji Movie. That's what it was. They're like, yeah.
There's no way,
like,
that movie's good.
It's sitting at like a 6% on Rotten Tomatoes. They're like, our movie's better than that. It's just these, you know, this aggregated score system is not working right. I'm like, no, it's working right.
But all the aggregated score is an aggregate of critics saying what they're going to say anyway.
Yeah.
So what's the difference? That's like, just that they have it all compiled into one number in one place, that's not your problem. The problem is that you have all of these critics saying terrible things about your movie. Why do you think that is?
But I do have a problem with like critic aggregators like that, because it doesn't, from what I understand about the way they compile it, doesn't take into account any review that doesn't have a numerical score. Even for Rotten Tomatoes, they don't, like, they'll have things like A+ or whatever, if there's a reviewer that does the ABC system, they in their math, they'll have A equals something to plug into their formula. But there are reviewers out there who just don't use scores at all. Like, I don't get listed on Metacritic because I don't have numerical reviews. If I included those in there, like every other metal website, I would get thrown
in. I know
in
that
there.
A lot of aggregates do that. I was under the impression that the only criteria for Rotten Tomatoes, and I could be wrong, but my impression for this was that Rotten Tomatoes was basically, was the review positive or was the review negative? And that's their only, I thought that was their only criteria.
I'll have to look into, because I thought that they did theirs by degrees, like by, like, they would.
But they don't really do music on there,
but
do
that's
they?
Why they no. do, that's why they do percentages. Is it's this percent thought it was good.
Okay, yeah.
That's my understanding, and I could be
and there's
very
a different
wrong.
There's always the audience and then the critic score on that too, you know?
That's true. But you rarely see like a wide difference between
You see it sometimes.
I've seen a few. Yeah.
Well, on polarized movies like Batman vs Superman, I saw that.
Yeah.
But okay, for example, the Dark Tower movie coming out, where I have seen negative press about that movie since last year, and it's like, come on, give the movie a chance to breathe.
So, so it has 18% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
Dark Tower?
The Dark Tower. But 98% of the people want to still see it.
I honestly...
So it honestly doesn't mean... these review scores don't mean shit.
Because it's gotten so many people saying, oh, it's going to be bad, and they haven't even seen it yet, and they were saying this like back in March or in February. I kind of want to see it just to see it, because I'm tired of fucking internet telling me what to think, you know? It's like, I actually think just based on the second preview I saw of it, the extended one they just released like 2 weeks ago, I thought like that looked like a cool movie, and I'm like, dude, McConaughey, Elba, I'm down.
If I didn't know anything about Dark Tower and based just on the strength of that trailer, I'd be like, man, this looks fucking cool.
It looks good. I think it actually looks really good.
So before we move on to our topic of the evening, you guys playing any games or anything?
I've just been playing this stupid Futurama game on my phone. I haven't had time to do anything.
I started picking up the Magic Kingdoms, is that what it's called? Yeah, I started playing that more.
I like the Futurama one better because it's funny.
It is funny.
There's nothing to it. Like, it's the same game as that Magic Kingdoms game with, like, a battle mode.
I haven't really had a lot of time to play anything. I've played a demo for a game called Vikings on the Xbox One called Vikings Wolves of Midgard, and it's a Diablo style game.
Cool.
It's really cool. So if you're, the only thing that's missing from it is a complete Amon Amarth soundtrack. Seriously, I should like play it in the background if when I'm playing the game.
Are you guys caught up on Game of Thrones?
Yes,
I've seen like a season and a half of Game of Thrones.
I am caught up.
So, really? Yeah.
I thought that would have been right up your street.
I might have to try the books. I don't really like the show that much. I have to be honest.
You know, when I think back to doing a rewatch, I kind of groan at the thought of season one and two because there's a lot of just like I mean it's slower moving than the later seasons, and there's a lot of unnecessary stuff. Just like
I will agree with you because okay, Kim, my wife, the voice from the other room, watched the first season. And I was there for a little bit of it. I watched it here and there, but I couldn't really get into it. And it wasn't until about 2 years later, a friend of mine let me borrow the Blu-rays that I really sat down and started watching it and figuring it out. I think what, for me, the biggest hurdle for that show was there were so many characters. I didn't know what the fuck was going on. I didn't know who was who. Why were they fighting?
It's a better paced show now.
It helps that, like, because Val's read all of the books.
Okay.
And so I can stop the show and be like, what are they talking about? And she can be like, okay, well, and she can explain to me what's going
on. See, I didn't have that. When she was watching it originally, I'm just like, I am lost. I don't know what's going on. But it wasn't until that time we watched the first, second, and third seasons, like, all in a row, just binge-watched it.
Yeah.
That's when I got into it.
What's rewarding about it as a viewing experience from, like, start to finish, and I know it takes a lot to get through those first two seasons, because there are good moments there, but there's a lot of talk that from
a lot of exposition.
Yeah, you know. A lot of exposition. But, you know, like, to see, like, epic stuff that happened the last season, and, like, in the last episode on Sunday, to see, finally, Jon and Daenerys meet.
For the fire and ice together.
Yeah, to see them face to face in the same room. And you're just thinking, like, I've been watching this show for 6 years and this is finally happening now.
It was sort of lackluster, wasn't it?
No. For me, it was just, it was like, I was really on the edge of my couch just going, oh, God, this is actually happening. Yeah, I don't know.
Spoiler.
Satisfying. Very satisfying.
It's getting good. I mean, it's ramping up to be to a good ending, I think.
I think they've been on fire for the past, like, two and a half seasons, where it's just like ever since Joffrey died, it's just been on a roll.
Ever since the Red Wedding,
yeah, just killing characters, just making it easier to understand.
Right,
they're dead.
There you go. That's why I like him so much now, because there's less characters to figure out.
Yeah,
I still sometimes I'm like, okay, who is this person? And they mentioned somebody. I'm like, okay, which Targaryen is this, or who is this guy? Who is that person they're talking about? It's very confusing.
Yeah. I think that part of my problem getting into it is that, like, almost everybody is horrible. Like, everyone's a horrible person. And I'm and I'm like, who am I supposed to be, like, who am I supposed to like?
Jon Snow.
I like Jon Snow, and, like, everybody else is fucking terrible. Yeah. And I think I think that's been part of my hurdle, is, like, I'm having trouble finding characters to relate to, or
you like the Starks
with.
That's the only people you're supposed to like.
Well, and I knew it was gonna happen, but you like Ned because he's a good dude, and then, well, you know, and I,
well, Sean Bean, of course he dies.
Sean Bond.
Yeah,
I really do think that for such a big blockbuster show that has, like, everyone, it's such an event show, I love the depth it has. And part of the treat this season has been, like, after a show finishes, I go to Twitter, and they have Talk the Thrones and After Show on Twitter.
Okay.
And Andy Greenwald and the guy who does the podcast with on The Ringer. They, I don't know, I like the idea of me, like, I'm into an after show that's not, you know, whatever the Chris Hardwick experience is or whatever.
When is Tony going to show up on it?
Yeah.
He never shows up.
How far has the Nerdist fallen? Podcast. I don't listen to it anymore.
I've listened to a few recently.
Because now half the episodes they have are the audio portion of talking with Chris Hardwick.
Oh, yeah. I've noticed that.
Which sucks. Like, what happened to the podcast I used to love anyway?
I haven't listened to Nerdist podcasts in at least a year.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
I have been playing one of the game. I actually plugged in my Game Boy, my 3DS, XL, whatever you want to call it. And I picked up the new Hey Pikmin game. Love Pikmin. That's a great series. Mm. A lot of the reviews have been pretty crappy on it, but I'm really enjoying it. It's touchscreen, so you control your little dude, And then to get past all the puzzles, you know, the Pikmin, you have to throw them and control them to do things. You actually touch the screen where you want them to go. And I think it's pretty intuitive. It works pretty well. And
so, I mean, go try things for yourself.
Exactly.
I say this as someone who writes reviews, but I expect that if I write a negative review of something, I expect there to be people disagreeing with me and saying, no, I actually like Epica's new album or whatever.
Not everybody is going to have your exact opinion.
Yeah, but I mean, I try to make it a point never to trash a band, even if I think that the album's completely awful. I never make it a point to get personal with it.
Okay.
I just try to explain why it is this is not working for me and why I think it could work if they did this or something like that.
That's true,
and
you do.
The problem with a lot of movie reviews is that sometimes they just trash the movies. And you're just kind of like...
If you haven't read
If I'm reading a review that reads like the comment section of any blog or website, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you haven't read any of Sean the Metal Pigeon's reviews on anything on his website, it's themetalpigeon.com. This guy will write you under the table. His prose is amazing. He can somehow articulate into words things that I've always thought about but never been able to get out.
It's the only way I'm able to do it. I can't do it when I talk.
Apparently.
So if I can focus on it, I can get it done.
You can't say brilliantly. I said it.
I just put up the new Winter Sun review.
I read your Winter Sun review. I listened to the album right after I read your review, actually.
Yeah.
And I can see your main point on that. Like, the first two songs are really, really good.
Really good.
And then it sort of tapers off.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, I don't know. It's just, I kind of wish that this album would have been more of a, like the first album, like a lot of songs, just normal length.
And this is the one that they got into all this, not really hot mess about, you know, about the crowdfunding and all that. And it took so long to make this album.
They did crowdfund for it.
Well, no, they did it a few times, didn't they?
They've only done one of three and they've already raised more than €500,000.
How much is that in American dollars?
Like $500,000.
Jeez.
Yeah.
To make this album?
No, the crowdfunding is for the purposes of building their recording studio, like buying the building and actually building the studio.
Okay. Well, I can see that then.
The crowdfunding is actually the way that it's like their pre-order system, because it's illegal in Finland to accept donations unless it's for the public good. So the way you get around that is by saying that you're not donating to us. You're buying the pre-order for the album, the big bundle of like all the stuff they'll give you.
That's sort of cool, though.
Yeah.
Did you do it?
No.
No.
It's like $50 or $60.
Oh, wow. Yeah. All right. So moving on to our topic, let's do that. Our topic actually this week is about music. So we'll be right back. And we are here, the topic of the week. And I was driving to work this morning, and I was listening to Spotify, and it just sort of occurred to me is how different it is the way we ingest music nowadays. So when I was thinking back to like high school, you know, it was okay, always go to the store, buy a CD, you would make mixtapes and you know all that kind of stuff. Now it's so different, and I thought it would be a really cool topic for all three of us on the show, because we're all big music fans and music nerds. To discuss, you know, A, how we're digesting our music and ingesting it a lot, and, you know, are we buying stuff, or how are we getting our music? So let's start off with you, Sean, our special guest, the Metal Pigeon.
I mean, how do I get my music?
Well, let's talk about that first. Where do you If a new release is coming out and you want to listen to it, where do you first go? Do you buy it digitally? Do you go try to seek the CD out? Or what do you do now?
It depends on who the band is. If it's one of my favorite bands, I'll always do the pre-order for the physical copy.
Yeah.
But the catch with that is, since I don't have jewel case CDs anymore, they're all in the big book now. Any physical product I buy has to be something other than a jewel case. It has to be like a digibook or some sort of box or something. It can't even be like a slipcase hiding that, like that, like the Eister Digipack. Yeah, it can't be like a slipcase that hides a jewel case, because I don't have use for jewel cases anymore. I'm not doing that. I'm not carrying those things around. So
you know, you did that. I thought about that. I'm like, I have so many jewel cases that are that are bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, and you know. That was a thing where it's like you didn't think about it at the time in the 90s or whatever, you know, that was just CDs. But now, like, what is the purpose of a jewel case? It's not really something that's worth displaying physical copies like that, like, you know, like nice physical editions that are actual works, like objects of art.
Sure.
I think jewel case CDs are more like software, but something that's like a nice box set presentation, that's art. That's like tangible art you can hold. So most of the time it's, yeah, I'll buy it off iTunes, or I'll, a lot of my music comes from promos, basically. So
yeah. Same here.
Or you know, if an album has already come out and I need to review it, I'll Spotify stream it, you know, or YouTube stream it or something.
Let's go with you, Dave. Where's your first go-to place?
Anymore, it's primarily Google Music or something like that. I used to be a Spotify subscriber. I changed over to Google Music, like a year ago. I have some reasons why. But the libraries are comparable. I haven't run into much that I couldn't find on both. Hmm. There have been a few kind of obscure things, but for the most part, the overlap's pretty good. The other good thing that I really like about it is Spotify supposedly has this feature, but I could never get it to work properly. The adding your own music to your library so that stuff that they don't have, you can still...
Yeah, I've never done that.
You can still stream it. Wherever you go, I like that, and it works pretty well.
Does Spotify do that?
Supposedly. I never liked how it worked,
because there's some missing stuff in my collection on Spotify that I just don't have to listen to there.
The catch is that it had the ID3 tags on the MP3s or whatever,
yeah,
or the audio files. They have to be perfect,
okay,
to register with Spotify. Otherwise, it won't even pick them up. Yeah, so.
And it's weird because sometimes on Spotify, it's just not licensed to listen to in America.
Yeah,
like, or you'll hear tracks. Like you'll get like one or two tracks off of an album or something like that.
Yeah.
For me now, it's a lot easier for Spotify. I have a family plan now, so for what I pay for it with me and my wife, it's only like $6 a month now, and you know I don't have to carry a bunch of shit around in the car or when I go to the gym or at work. It's all so I can get ready for work in the morning, and we have one of the Amazon Echo boxes, like, hey, play Spotify, and it'll play something off my playlist that I was just listening to. I can jump in the car, continue that song, get to work, continue that song, and it's all right there.
Right, yeah.
But I am right there with you. I collect music. I collect CDs. And if it's a band that I really, really support and I really, really love, I will go out of my way to make sure I have a physical version of that album.
And yeah. I prefer to do that as well. I guess about the time, I'm trying to think, probably about the time I moved to Houston, I guess I packed up all my CDs, which I used to display proudly. I had shelves for them and everything. But when I moved, I didn't have that anymore. And so they all got put in boxes for the move. And they have stayed there. And like I can access them. I will get them out and kind of sort through them, pull stuff out and, you know, buy stuff and add it back into the boxes. And it's my filing system now, but it's not a very effective or efficient filing system. And I think corresponding with that is kind of when I stopped buying CDs so much. And I think that part of it is that no matter what it is, I prefer to have a physical copy of whatever it is, if it's movies or games or anything.
Yeah, me too.
I prefer to have a physical object. I feel like I own it in that case. But number two, I also feel like, and I'm no psychologist, but I feel like there's something that could be said. I think that there is, there's something psychological that happens when you have physical artwork, like you're talking about, you have liner notes to flip through, you have artwork that you can hold in your hands, that I feel helps you make a connection to the music better. And I think it creates a better experience, that it's easier for you to connect with what's going on. So I prefer that, but between, you know, like my CDs are kind of hidden away for the most part, plus I, you know, have kids and kids are expensive, and I don't have the kind of budget to spend on music like I did when I was in college and was poor as shit anyway, but any spare dime I had went to buying CDs. Life's not like that anymore, and so it's a lot more efficient for the price of buying one CD to have, you know, a world of music available to me.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's a practicality issue. It's not really my preferred. It's more I'm more there out of practicality.
Sure.
So
it's weird that when streaming services, let's go back before even streaming services, it was all the illegal downloading.
Mm-hmm.
They said that was going to be the downfall of the music industry, which it has affected it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the streaming services
came out. So they legitimized it with the streaming service.
Exactly
right.
Which
is rife with its own problems.
It is. But they sort of figured out a way to monetize it. But I think the artists need to get paid better. I don't know all the logistics and all the numbers and all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, I've heard stories, you know.
Yeah, I've heard stories too.
But, I mean, the convenience factor now of opening up, like I said, turning on Spotify. And I used to one of the big things I used to love to do was make mixtapes.
Mm-hmm.
Spotify, you can make mixtapes till the fucking cows come home. Never have to worry about space or how many songs you can fit on here.
That was my playlist that I made for my birthday party a couple weeks back. That like I was like, oh, I'm just gonna make like an all purpose metal playlist to just put on random at my party, right?
Yeah.
And like it was it like by the time I got done before the party, there was almost 800 tracks on it. Like, there's no way we're going to listen to a fraction of this.
72 hours.
It was ridiculous. It was completely ridiculous. And I'm like, well, now I have something that I think I'm going to continue to grow. Right. And it's just going to turn into this epically long, like, survey of metal history.
I do that playlist. I do the exact same thing when I'm bored. I'll create playlist on Spotify. And if you guys are out there, you want to follow me on Spotify, you can listen to any of this shit out there. You can, like, follow people's playlists and all that kind of stuff. I'm working on one right now. It's called Best Songs Ever.
Okay.
And it's fucking, it runs the gamut of everything that I like. And it's just cool to put on in the background or when I'm at work, just to press play and not have to worry about, oh, I'm going to skip this song. I don't really like this song. I like every song on that playlist. You know what I mean? It's cool to do that.
Spotify is one of the most useful tools ever, and I hate using it, but I use it all the time.
It's a necessary evil.
I feel like, okay, for example, the band, you know, we're looking at the Iced Earth album right there. I have every Iced Earth album physical copy of, right? And I have the box set and everything, and I have the triple disc live album and everything, and it's all kind of stowed away, except for the box sets and stuff. They're all stowed away in my CD book now, my big binder. And my laptop doesn't even have a disk drive in it anymore.
Right.
So I have an external. That's where I rip stuff to, you know, that's how I rip stuff to my computer. But when I go and when I want to listen to, like, the other day I wanted to listen to, for example, the other week I wanted to listen to an Iced Earth album, an old one. And I didn't go to my CD book, even though it was right over there. I just pulled up Spotify and listened to it there.
Mm-hmm.
And there is something I don't like the fact that Spotify has taken away the idea of me going into a record store, like a local, like Cactus Music or something, and buying something and feeling satisfied buying something. Because I'll go in the car. This is the only time I'll put into my actual car Discman.
Yeah.
And I'll listen to it there, or car CD player, whatever. And then I'll come home, I'll rip it, and I'll never touch the CD again.
Right. Yeah.
And I hate that. And it's just like, but it's convenient because I could just call it up with like a mouse click.
But we're living in the digital age. I definitely see that.
Yeah.
So I carry my phone around, obviously, everywhere, and I have my streaming services as well, but I also still carry this everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm holding an old style iPod.
I have an iPod Nano in my car right now.
And
we have two iPods still, which they just stopped making those completely. They're not making anymore.
I just heard that news.
Yeah. So I still carry this with me, and I'm still very concerned with things like my own personal library on my own digital library, I should say.
Yeah, like stuff. And
making sure everything is nice and organized and all that kind of stuff.
Like if someone asked me do you have the new, do you have the new freaking Angra album or something, right? And I go, well, I have access to it.
Right.
I don't know if I own it. So I have access to a service that allows me to lease the listening rights.
Recently, Dream Evil put a brand new album out about a month ago called Six, right? And I wanted to buy the damn album. I looked on Amazon. It's still going for $27 for a CD. I went on the Spotify. The day of release, it was there for me to listen to.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, so I'm just going to listen to it then.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that means... I mean, that's one of the bands where I would buy it for my collection, but I've listened to it so much now, it's, when is that going to happen?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Talking about this feeling, like you talked about, of going in and actually making a decision in a store and walking out with something and that now you're kind of invested in. And I think that adds to the psychology of it as well, that I've invested in this. I have to give it a shot.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm more likely to listen to it more to see what I can get out of it than if I scroll by something that I've never heard before on a streaming service and go, yep, don't like it, on to the next thing. Right. There's no investment there. You're not personally involved as much. And I think that maybe that creates something. So maybe, and I'm very late to the game on this thing, and I'm just kind of learning about it now. But maybe a kind of a middle ground for that is something like Bandcamp, where you go, there's a streaming element, but you have to buy into it. You have to actually support the artist. And, I'm thinking about trying to get into that because I miss that feeling of like, I'm going to find something cool and invest myself into it and support the artist actively. And the way I understand it is they set their own pricing. And so they kind of decide how much they get out of whatever the purchase is, which I like a little bit better.
I get that feeling from Bandcamp where it's like, oh yeah, I've chipped in my investment with this. Like when Immortal Bird, when their trailer got stolen.
Right.
I went that day and bought that album on their Bandcamp and I, you know, actually ended up listening to it a lot more than I probably would have, you know? You know, that Mercury album, that first Mercury, or the big one that came out 2 years ago, I went to Cactus Music, was just kind of browsing, had no idea what I was looking for, if I was looking for anything, and just saw it there, and I was like, oh, that's a cool-looking album cover. I think I've heard of that band before. It's that lady black metal band in my mind, is what I'm thinking. I'm like, oh, that cover looks so great.
That's
what
so
the
sexist,
hell? I'll give it a shot. So I bought it and listened to it on the way back home, and I was like, this is great. Like, I like this a lot, and I ended up listening to the album way more than I probably would have just instantly dismissed it or maybe taken a cursory listen to it on Spotify otherwise, you know? So there is something to buying music still, but at the same time, in the back of your mind, you're kind of like, I already have access to it. Mm-hmm. I know the album's been released. I already have access to it. What do I need to buy it for? You know? Because the question I used to ask my friends when I was growing up was, Have you bought the new Metallica album? Have you bought the new Megadeth album yet? You know, oh, did you get the new da 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 album?
And now have you heard it?
And now it's have you heard it?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, have you heard this? What do you mean you haven't heard it? It's just YouTube it. You know, just Spotify it. It's available to you. You have access to it. So it's not about ownership anymore.
And people can't complain that okay, even Spotify, you don't have to pay for the damn service. You could get an ad supported version of it for free.
Yeah.
No cost to you. And you're going to be able to listen to everything on there. You can't pick and choose when and how you want to listen to it. Like on your, I think on mobile devices, you can't do it that way. But
on desktop, you can listen to whatever you want.
Right, but you're going to get ads. That's how they make the money off of you for not paying for it. But anything you want to, oh, I didn't know this band had a new album out. I'm going to go check it out. Or, you know, I heard about this band. Let me go check this out real quick. It's so easy. I equate it to, I used to love like going into the CD store. Well, I think Sound Warehouse or whatever used to be able to do it. Go in there and go, hey, I want to listen to the CD. And they would open the thing up for you. Mm-hmm. And they had like a bar of CD players and you can sit there and listen to it.
Right.
That's where I discovered Iced Earth for the very first time. I walked into it and I was just browsing around. I'm like, oh, Spawn's on this fucking album cover. I was like, what is this? I was like, can I please listen to this, sir? And they opened it up, and I listened to it, and I bought it.
Yeah, I bought so many albums just on cover art. But that part hasn't gone away from metal, because you still see cool cover art, and you go, I'll go Spotify this real quick.
Or see, that Spotify is the new version of listening to a CD in the store.
Yeah.
Of that experience of, oh, I've heard about this, or I want to check this out. Now I want to hear what it sounds like.
Yeah.
But here's where it falls short for me. I think a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people, once they listen to it, they don't go purchase it. It's like, oh, I already have this. I have it on Spotify. I don't have to pay for this now.
It just annoys me because it's taken away a legitimate hobby from me. I used to collect music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I, at one point, had over 1,500 CDs. And I pared that down to
Slacker.
A crazy low number now. And it's like, well, that I don't do that anymore, I guess. That's something else. It's gone. And I don't buy DVDs anymore because, shit, everything is on streaming services.
I remember when I first got into Stradivarius, like, what, 5 years ago?
Yeah.
You're like, you like Stradivarius now? I'm like, yeah, I like him. I'm really getting into him. He's like, here's all my CDs.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. I'm getting rid
of all this stuff, yeah. And now if I ever have a hankering, to go listen to Visions, I can just go to Spotify.
Yeah, it's true.
It's like,
all
right.
So know. I have to, because of all of the psychology that we're talking about here, all of these kind of the habits that have changed and all that, I actually have to remind myself, and I have it in my notes where I do my planning and stuff like that. I have to set aside time and go sit and actually listen to something like.
Yeah.
Is in terms of actively listening, where it's not just something that I put on while I'm driving or while I'm doing work or whatever. Yeah. It's sit down and listen to this. You know, I maybe that's just part of, you know, being 35 now and not being 17, that life is just different, that I have to remember and be like, sit down and spend some time actually digesting this, where it's not just background or it's just a cursory part of my consciousness at the moment where I'm doing something else.
I actively had to make myself, okay, I had to tell myself, okay, when I'm going to listen to new music or I'm going to listen to something that I just bought or something, I'm going to listen to it by itself. And then my background stuff, when I'm like cooking or washing dishes or driving, that's for podcasts. So that's when I'll do the podcast thing. Cause it's just disposable, whatever. But, not calling our show disposable, but you know, music is something where I'll actually sit there and concentrate, and I'll like listen to it on headphones, and I'll stare at the corner of the wall or something like that, and I'll kind of like, or I'll close my eyes and try to like, you know, absorb it. And I won't multitask. I won't even like read stuff while I'm doing it. You know, sometimes I might just like look around on like videos and stuff on mute while I'm listening to an album, but I have to be paying attention to the album, that kind of thing.
So. Only if it's porn, though. Yeah. That usually helps music.
The other thing with Spotify that's annoying me is that it's a little too I'm getting a little too reliant on it now for everything, for like I listen to these ambient playlists when I'm trying to concentrate. So that effectively made me like say, oh, I don't need all these ambient CDs I used to have. I get rid of those. So I got rid of those. And I listened to it for, what is it? They have these like curated playlists too. Like they kind of have the new metal stuff going on.
Right.
But they have like stuff for other genres that I'm like trying to like, oh, I'll keep up with what's going on.
Okay.
And sometimes I get the feeling that a lot of that stuff is just about placement. About label placement.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's just like back in the 60s where radio stations were being paid, the payola scandal that was going on to play these records from these bands from the record labels.
Yeah.
I see that too. Yeah.
Like, cause the Apple Music thing, they have things where they have curated things where it's like this person, this reviewer is curating this list or Banger TV has a metal curation on Apple Music. Spotify doesn't do that. Everything there is like, you don't know who's put this together. There's no context behind it. That pisses me off because it's like, I find myself listening to those and I'm like, but there's no face behind it. It's all faceless. It's just these blank playlists. And I know that they have user defined playlists and stuff, but those are hard.
Spotify does do some stuff. There's a series that I found on there called Metal Talks. Have you heard this?
I think so.
I listened to the Anthrax one recently. There's a Pain one. Pain of Salvation did one. So it's full, you know, like interviews with like a guy in the band. And then they pick out the music that they're going to play.
Okay.
The Anthrax one was really good. The Pain of Salvation one was really good. Where Daniel Gyllenhaal was really got into the story of being in the hospital and having the flesh-eating bacteria. And how the new album, you know, was a concept album based on that bacteria that he had. And that's why it was a heavier album for him, you know. And there are stuff like that. There's the release radar, of course. And it starts to learn your algorithms. So it has like your daily mix playlist that it creates for you.
Yeah.
You ever go to those?
I have, and it's just all over the place.
Exactly. It is all over the place. Yeah. And that's what I enjoy.
Google Music has kind of the same way where, it's Google, so obviously they're in the having your personal information business and figuring out what your habits and tendencies are. Even there, like, I sometimes wish their new releases was more extensive, because it's usually like, here's like 6 new releases, and then the rest of them are new releases for shit that you have no interest in whatsoever.
Right.
Like, it's whatever the top like pop or hip hop thing is that I don't care about.
Yeah.
And give me more, like the first 6 on here, give me more of those. And don't just give me the stuff that came out this week. Give me the stuff that came out for the last month.
Spotify does that for, it'll pick something for you called the release radar one. And it's different for every person. So it knows what you're listening to. It knows what kind of style of music you're listening to. And it'll start picking new songs from bands that you might have never heard of, or new releases. And I've discovered some bands recently. That's how I discovered Aeternum. Was just like, I'm going to check out this playlist and see what's on there. And every once in a while, there's something, and it's like, holy fuck, that's really good.
I have this other problem, I think, with the streaming services. And obviously, it's cool. It's a great discovery tool, like you just mentioned, where you'll hit the related artist or whatever and be like, who's in here that I've never heard of, or a name that I know that I've never listened to? Okay, cool. I'm going to go check that out, add it to the lexicon or whatever. I have this other problem, though, with the streaming services, where I'm like, I'm going to go listen to music and pull it up and then look at the search bar and go, I don't know what the fuck. Like,
too much
I have the
choice.
There's too much. Like, yeah. And that I feel like an old fart saying that. but it's true, though. Like, I get to the search bar and I go, what am I doing? Well, like, who am I looking for?
I just read an article about this, like this phenomenon with Netflix where –
you spend more time looking for something to watch on Netflix than you spend watching Netflix. That's what I do.
It's called the phrase they use, the paralysis of choice,
mm-hmm.
where when you see all these options, you get overwhelmed to a point where you just go back to the one option you know.
That you know.
And that's why they say most Netflix accounts, they just rewatch the same, like, you know, half a dozen shows.
I've watched Stranger Things 3 times now.
Right. Like, I've gone through Always Sunny in Philadelphia like maybe a dozen times all the way through. And it's just because it's reliable, I'll watch another episode of that. And it's like, and the thing is, Spotify, that does happen sometimes. And, you know, the whole recommend new music thing where you discover things, honestly, I don't think I've actually discovered a new metal band that I like through there. I've discovered them through you telling me, hey, I heard this on the new Spotify thing. And the reason why I sound like such a crotchety old person when I'm talking about Spotify is because I don't like that it seems to be somewhat of a replacement for the human element of like, hey, man, I heard this band. You would really like them. I mean, see, I like hearing about a new band when you tell – like you told me about Erebel Tour on the last episode of the MSRcast. Now I've been listening to that album of theirs, and I'm like, yeah, I love this band.
Where have you been listening to it at?
An old album on YouTube, I think.
What about Spotify?
I haven't checked on Spotify.
They're on Spotify.
Okay. But yeah, so
bringing it back around,
I see that is like, okay, yeah. I heard it from a person because I know what kind of music you listen to and I know your tastes and stuff and you know me. And like, that's the thing, like the greatest thrill for me in writing the Metal Pigeon is when someone says, hey, thanks for the recommendation on this, or thanks for bringing these guys on the blog. I didn't know about them and I love them. Now
right.
That for me is the biggest charge in writing
that's,
the blog.
That's still the reason. That's the main factor why I still do MSRcast, why we still do it together, and why I do this show. It's all opinions.
Yeah.
But if you can bring something to somebody's attention they didn't know about and they like it, just like you like it, that's worth it all right there.
I think that's still a thing that's still a really valuable aspect to this whole hobby, this whole experience, because there's probably never been a time where there's been as much content available. No matter what your poison is, whether it's movies or books or music or whatever, there's such a glut of content of all kinds, that this human element is still incredibly necessary.
Yeah, curation. Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just lost.
And now you don't have to go search for it. It's all, like, right on your phone. You can watch all these movies, TV, music, books. Anything you want is right there. I hate to say it like this, but it's right there at your fingertips. You don't have to fucking leave your couch to do any of this stuff anymore.
When Netflix recommends stuff to me, I don't click on it. I will wait until someone tells me about it to click on it. Like, that show Gypsy has been showing up on the top of my Netflix, hey, check this out, and I have ignored it for, like, a couple weeks. And then finally someone had mentioned it to me, like, oh, you should check out that show Gypsy, it's really crazy. I'm like, okay.
Let me bring up this question. Speaking of retro, so vinyl collecting has become sort of the new big thing recently, past 10 years or so, I guess.
Yeah.
I collect vinyl again, but mostly bands that I'm really, really into, and I really want to have that vinyl experience.
Your vinyl collection is 90% Monkees, isn't it?
70%.
Okay.
Actually, yes. No, but we're collecting all the Iron Maiden stuff now. There's a couple bands like Anthrax that I really want to collect all on vinyl. There's a certain band that you just want to have that experience, and there's other things that we've bought. Like, we just bought some Bortnagar recently, and, like, I bought the new Arion on vinyl. But, you know, I'm not going to go out and purchase them all because they're expensive.
Right.
Vinyl can be very, very pricey. Judas Priest is another band that I'm collecting on vinyl. All the older albums. Probably everything up to Turbo. But, you know, it's a different experience. It's a lot of fun. Like,
collecting now is a choice.
Right. Yes.
In the past, it was just a byproduct. Like, I love music, and as a result of me loving music, I end up buying all these things.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I have a collection without ever meaning to have a collection.
Yeah.
Now, collecting is a choice because, like you said, you have everything on your phone. So now,
right. Why buy a CD? Why buy the new Arion on vinyl?
Look at how many friggin' DVDs you have here.
Yeah.
And, like, just like, you could probably find all those in the streaming service. But you're a collector at heart.
Yes.
You've made a choice to be a collector.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, no. You can't look around this house and not think that.
Yeah.
I mean,
we're planning the intervention for a couple months from now.
Okay.
So
I'll prepare for that.
No, I think it's cool. I think I'm kind of jealous of that because in a way, because I'm like, I don't collect anything anymore. I have no collection. And books, I'll sell books. I'll get rid of books. Like, oh, I already read that. I'm not going to read that.
I've reached critical mass on books.
There are core things I'll never get rid of. Like, I'll never get rid of The Great Gatsby. I love that book. I'll never get rid of American Gods or whatever. But other things, I'll just like, I read that. Probably not going to read that again.
I've reached that point in life, too. I reach, because Val and I are both big, we just like the idea of books, even. Just like, the idea that there are, like, old books somewhere. We're like, oh, well, old books? Let's go check that out. That sounds cool, you know? And so we have some, like, you know, artistic, you know, editions of books, you know, nice hardbound things. We have tons and tons of paperbacks, and we have always kept everything that we've ever bought, and we've reached critical mass and we're like, this isn't working anymore.
With games too, like I've gotten rid of old games I'm never going to play in the 360 again. It's like, I'm never going to play them again. So, and then in the absence of that, in the absence of not having a collection, you do feel some kind of emptiness. Which is weird, because I hate that feeling, because it's like, it means that you're somewhat materialistic, and you're trying not to be, but everything around you is trying to get you to be, you know?
I made this connection some time back about this, not necessarily I'm collecting because I'm like curating this collection because it's something I'm passionate about, but this idea of, I have this thing and I'm not going to get rid of it, and I feel like... for both me and my wife, it might come from growing up not always having everything that you needed necessarily.
Right, yeah.
And so it turns into, like, I wasn't in poverty growing up, but there were times where it was like, well, I can't have this thing because we can't afford to have the thing, right? And Val was a little bit more dire. She was wearing, like, hand-me-down clothes that had already been handed down twice before they got to her, kind of, you know, stuff like that. And I think that this, like, kind of growing up with a sense of scarcity, where you're like, well, now I've got,
right,
I can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
But then you end up with where you're like our book collection, we can't enjoy it because there's too many of them.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And so this thing that we're passionate about, we can't get enjoyment out of because we're kind of drowning in it. And so we have to cull it out. We have to be like, okay, so we're going to have to get rid of this stuff and get rid of stuff and keep the really nice things that we really care about.
Yeah.
In order to make room and use like the selling of the books to fund buying new books.
Sure. Right.
And get those new books all that kind of stuff. I actually read we've talked about it before, but all of the millennials are destroying whatever industry you can think of stuff, all these articles. Apparently, though, one of the things that millennials are not destroying is libraries. Millennials are apparently, according to some study, I guess it was done, I don't know, have any information on it, but they're saying that millennials use libraries more than any generation prior.
Yeah. We check out graphic novels from the library all the time.
I get graphic novels from the library. Yeah.
Nothing wrong with it. You know, so another aspect of this whole collecting thing, and I was just thinking about, sometimes it's the thrill of the hunt, too. So you have a list of things that you want for your collection, and then I'll just, hey, I'm going to go on eBay and pay this, horrible price for it or whatever. It's going into a half price. It's going into a music store or a vinyl store you've never been into. Go, hey, it's cool to have this. I'm going to get it. And it's, you know, it's that cool thrill that I used to have going into a CD store looking for something that I was looking for. You know what I mean? You can still get that, but not with, there's not many physical CD stores left. And if you have one, support them, those guys.
I just wish, like, for new releases, they're coming out in CD. Stop. Yeah. Like, I just wish they would stop with the jewel case. Because I do go to, Cactus is like a small metal section.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go there and I'll go, oh, cool, they have that. Oh, it's a jewel case. Fuck that. I don't buy anything. I just walk out. It's like, all right, you know.
Yeah.
And then the special edition you can get online, like the new Stephen Wilson album, there's going to be like all these special editions coming out. And I'm definitely getting one of the special editions. I'm not sure which yet. But I know that if I wait for it to come out in a store and I go there and I look for it,
they're going
to
have the regular, boring, vanilla version.
Boring, crap version. It's like, what the fuck are you guys open for? Am I buying software? Am I buying art? What is, you know, like.
And I think they, I don't know why they still make jewel case versions, because who's buying them, number one? To get somebody, I mean, okay, we have the new iStars in front of me. There's nothing special on it. There's no bonus tracks. There's no nothing different than you could get on a regular version of it. But it's this nice digipack, opens, folds out, and you have all the artwork and everything. It's something you want in a collection.
Right, yeah.
I definitely see that. But, yeah. I mean, if they had this was the normal this is the normal version of the album. I don't think there is a regular jewel case of this album.
Jewel cases made bands in the late 90s, in the 90s, throughout the 90s and the late 90s and the early aughts get lazy with packaging.
Yeah.
I bought The Cult. They had an album in 06 called Born Into This. And the art, okay, you open up the jewel case and the booklet was literally one panel. It just opened up and there was the credits and that was it.
You know, games now, they don't come with instruction booklets.
Yeah.
It's all inside the game on your system.
And you're wondering what the hell you bought this for. You could just download the game. Yeah. Yeah.
There's no maps or any of that. Okay, that's a whole different subject.
But then, you know, the absurdity of some of these things, like this, the Egypt Assassin's Creed that's coming out later this year, the Ultimate Edition is like $1,000.
What? Really?
Yeah, it's like, it's got like a, like some sort of, statue, I guess it's like a mummy or something like that, and it's like all this other stuff with it, and you're kind of like, okay, that's a little bit absurd.
That is absurd.
Ridiculous. I remember going when these like $100 ones came out. You're like, fuck, really?
Yeah, I know.
$150, whatever they were.
They have different tiers, and that's the grand tier.
That's the one you're going for? You're saving up for that one? Wow. So what have we learned tonight? We've learned that
it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, we stream a lot, but we still buy physical.
Love-hate relationship.
Yes.
I love the convenience, and I hate the soulless, soullessness.
That sums it up really well. I agree. The convenience wins out for me.
Yes, me too.
The convenience absolutely wins out. But that means that I have to really inject myself in and invest my attention in order to get as much out of it.
Yeah.
So on that point, I'm going on a road trip soon, and instead of getting a case of CDs out with me, I'm just going to use Spotify the whole time.
Yeah, it's practical, makes sense.
Stream. I can stream it Bluetooth straight to my, you know, straight into my car. I don't have to worry about it. You know.
Yeah.
It's convenient.
Oh, it wins on convenience. It gets all of the marks for convenience.
Yeah.
But you know, I'll say my last point on this is that every week I listen to a college radio show broadcast out of Cleveland. It's Dr. Metal's The Metal Meltdown. I've been listening to the show since 1998. Dr. Metal.
Shout out.
And he got me into power metal. He's the reason I am a big power metal fan today. And that's the metal he likes. That's the metal he plays on his show. And he kind of is my curation into like what I should be looking out for, because he gets all the stuff first and he's just on it. And I will never stop listening to that guy's show as long as he keeps doing it, because I trust his voice so much. I trust his opinion and judgment so much on it. He got me into Blind Guardian. He got me into Hammerfall. He introduced those bands to me in 98. He introduced all these important bands to me. And when I go to Spotify, there's no voice like that that I can trust, you know? He does a college radio show that you can't even download. You have to stream the replay. You know, there's no MP3 to download or anything. It's just like,
I wish there were two guys that you could really trust their opinion on their musical taste.
Yeah.
They might have a podcast. They should call it something like MSRcast or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, with the Metal Pigeon, I don't have like a big reader base, but I am very grateful for the fact that I do have like a group of people who come to the site and they're always interested, like really interested in what I have to say about certain things. And then, like, when people, like, comment to me that I helped them get into, like, this band or whatever, and it's like...
It's a good feeling, isn't
that's
it?
That's the reason why I keep doing it, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, I remember that I know that there's a guy out there in Cleveland who runs a radio show that I listen to every week, that he is that for me, so, you know.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening as blabbing on about this topic here. I think we learned a lot of good stuff, you know.
Yeah.
It was a very informative discussion.
Old man thing. Yeah, technology.
Get off my lawn, you new technology. All right, well, let's wrap up the show.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the end of episode number 135 of the Metal Geeks podcast. Now, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about this. I wanted to give this topic enough time to really to discuss. This is the sad part of the show. Somebody that has affected my life a lot. I know for you too, Dave.
Yeah.
Marty Sklar has passed away, and most of you don't even know who that is. So we're going to give you a little brutal education here, as well as our is our tribute to the man.
So, what do we want to say? I mean, do we want
let's talk about who he was.
Do we want to talk about his resume, which is impressive?
Oh yeah.
So
he's a So you know, Dave and I are both big Disney geeks. So he's one of the leading Imagineers. He hasn't been with Disney in a while, but he's been like a consultant for them for a long time. But if you've ever been to Disney, this guy's been part of your childhood.
Correct. I can give you the quick rundown from, I'm just looking at his Wikipedia page.
Let's do it.
The quick rundown. So he joined Disneyland full-time in 1956 and handled the park's publicity and marketing materials. 1961, he moved to Wed Enterprises, which later became Disney Imagineering. And he worked on attractions for the New York World's Fair. And if you know anything about the history of the Disney parks, you understand how important that event was. So he worked on the Enchanted Tiki Room, It's a Small World. For nearly 10 years, he wrote personal materials for Walt Disney for use in publication, television, and special films. In 1974, he became the vice president of concepts and planning and guided the creative development of Epcot Center at Florida's Walt Disney World. As vice president of creative development, executive vice president, and then president of Imagineering for 9 years, Sklar supervised the design and construction of Tokyo Disneyland, Disney MGM Studios, Disneyland Paris, Disney's Animal Kingdom, Disney California Adventure Park, Tokyo Disney Sea, the Walt Disney Studios Park, and Hong Kong Disneyland. So, and then here was the quote, I mentioned this earlier, that when the news broke, I was I was saddened, and then I read this quote, and then I was really sad.
Yeah.
Former Disneyland International Chairman Jim Cora later said of him, "He understands the Disney way because he learned it at Walt's knee. He is the keeper of the keys, the conscience, the Jiminy Cricket for the organization."
Wow. The seven keys.
Yeah.
Because there's the Seven Seas Lagoon, right?
Correct.
So he's the keeper of the seven keys.
There he is.
Yeah, we're bringing back to being metal.
He worked for Disney for 53 years and retired in 2009.
And he was a consultant for it. He would still do stuff.
Yeah.
He'd always be at D23. When I was in D23 in 2013, I was in line to meet him, and the line got cut off, like, seriously, like three or four people before me to actually get a book autographed, which I have right here. I've started reading it a long time ago. Now I'm really going to dive into it. And he has a new book, too. It's right above you, too, that came out last year or year before. Yeah. So he's written two books. And if it's the first one is more about how he did everything, his sort of like a story. The other one is more about how you can bring the Disney way, I guess, into your life, into your work, that type of thing. You know what I mean?
Sounds like a horrible thing to some people, I'm sure.
To some people, yeah. Not to us, though. But he's definitely going to be missed. It was a big shock to me. I mean, it was sad. It had that wave of, you know, emotion that came over me when I first read the first article. I was like, no, this can't be real. It was a very sad moment for somebody I've never met. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in the vicinity of him, but he affected my life a lot. Just like anybody that I grew up listening to or watching on, you know, being a fan of, when they pass, it affects you emotionally because you are that much of a fan.
Mm-hmm. I felt that way about Chris Cornell earlier this year.
I did too.
A lot of celebrity deaths are sad, but it's kind of like, oh, it's sad, it doesn't affect me personally. I felt oddly personally affected by Chris Cornell.
What about Chester Bennington?
Not at all.
Me either.
And I don't mean that to be disrespectful.
We mentioned him on the last show that, you know, we respect the guy, we respect his music and all that stuff, but we were just never fans.
I've never been a fan of anything that I've heard from Linkin Park, but it, of course, it's still very sad. It's not one that affects me personally, but I don't mean that to take away from anybody.
Exactly right.
Everyone who I was watching on my Twitter that day, it was like people who are younger than us.
I remember
for me, it was Ryan James Dio. That one kind of took me out of action for a couple of days, like emotionally.
Peter Steele for me as well. Yeah.
I spent like a week listening to exclusively Typo Negative after Peter Steele died.
And another one for me, being the Big Monkees fan, was when Davy Jones died. Mm-hmm. But, it affected me, but it wasn't, I don't know, it was weird.
I think some of them you're not surprised by, like when Layne Staley died, it was like, oh, okay, so Layne Staley died. I'm not really surprised, you know,
right?
Like Layne Staley had "I'm About to Die Young" written all over him. And
did they have a song called that?
Yeah. I mean, he wrote a song about it and everything. Wrote a song about it. You want to hear it? It's sad, but it wasn't unexpected in that case. It's the ones like Peter Steele and Chris Cornell where, they're still relatively young and it seems to come out of nowhere. And, Marty Sklar was 83, you know,
that's a good life.
It's a respectable, respectable run.
Yeah.
You know,
I'd be happy to live to 83. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, sure.
You're like, I don't know who he is, but
yeah. Bring this back to metal for a second. He was a big Disney guy. Is a Tool Must Hole painted of Nightwish.
Oh, yeah, he did a whole concept album on Scrooge McDuck.
But I mean, even beyond that, like, just for most of his inspiration for Nightwish songs, like, he's made a point of saying in interviews, whenever he, like, feels like he's running low on inspiration and creativity, he'll go to Disneyland and go to Disney World and he'll feel like that magic, that Disney magic. And for me,
he gets it then.
I kind of view all that stuff with like a lot of cynicism, and I'm not a big theme park guy. I can't see that, but like I always admire someone who can like, oh, you know, I go there, I feel it's like a different thing for them. It's like a different experience. And
it's a happy place for them. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
It's a place to recharge and to, you know, you know,
the Disney way, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, not everybody's going to get it. I get that.
Yeah.
I mean, get it.
There's certainly plenty to be cynical about the Disney Corporation.
Yeah.
Like there's certainly a lot of things that are worthy of looking at with a critical eye and being like, this is kind of a, of questionable ethics and things like that. And
sure.
I don't ever,
it's still a corporation. It's,
right. And so you still have that same baggage and that same kind of BS. And I try not to excuse them for some of the shittier things that they pull. I try to at least, I mean, they don't care what I think, but you know, for my own sake, I try to kind of, you know, hold their feet to the fire, and you know, I'm willing to take a critical eye at it. But at the same time, it's the other side of it. It's the creative side,
right,
and the innovative side and the dreamer side of it. That's what I like.
Yeah. I just, you know who Rick Steves is, the travel guy.
Mm-hmm.
He has a radio show, podcast thing, and he had recently the guy who writes the Disney guidebooks for Frommer's or whatever.
Oh, okay.
And this guy, like, this is his assignment. This is what he does for that company. And they spent the entire episode talking about,
job,
like, the, like, technical, logistical side of how you're supposed to plan a trip to maximize your time and, like, how to avoid being frustrated. And, like, everything just about a trip to Disney World from their discussion was sounded so stressful. Even Rick Steves at one point was like, he's like, wow, this is this sounds really intense, you know.
it's not that bad.
Yeah.
I think the important thing to take away from that is, if, and this is what I tell people who are like maybe going for the first time or who have gone like a long time ago,
you're probably
the
same advice I'm about back, to give too,
which is, if you go, have a framework for what you want to do.
That's pretty much what he was saying too.
But because if you go in without a plan, you will be absolutely overwhelmed.
And also know this, you can't do
and you can't do everything.
Right.
Don't freak out if you don't get something done. It's still gonna, well, can't say that, it might not be there later, but don't freak out about it. I mean,
so
you can't
have a
much
plan
to do.
But don't set your plan in stone.
Yeah.
Having,
be flexible, yeah, for sure.
It's been like at least 20 years since I've been there. Like early 90s was the last time I went to Disney World.
You ready to go? Let's go.
I could.
Yeah.
I'm all right. I've seen enough.
All right. So thanks again to Marty Sklar for all he's done. I didn't want this to get too sad, but there it is right there. I guess we need to talk about our sponsor real quick after that. You want to do it?
Sure.
Do you know it? You have no idea. So this goes very well with this episode about collecting stuff, right? So our new sponsor, of course, is tantrumcollectibles.com. And they have cool brands such as Funko, Bandai, Artifacts, which do those really cool statues, Band Presto, all that kind of stuff. So if you're looking for collectible figures and Funkos and, you know, vinyl collectibles, go to tantrumcollectibles.com, put in the code MetalGeeks, you're going to save 10% off your entire order.
Not bad.
And there you go. So right after talking about deaths, we'll talk about saving money on collectibles and move on.
Yeah.
I guess let's talk about where everybody can find us on the social medias. Of course, you can find all the Metal Geek stuff at metalgeeks.net, which is home for both of these shows, Metal Geeks, as well as the show I do here with Sean, MSRcast. And you can find us on all the social medias, again, at Metal Geeks, the Twitter, the Facebooks, the Instagrams, all that stuff. MetalGeeks.net, iTunes, subscribe to us there, leave reviews. We'd love to hear reviews from you guys. Google Music is now part of it, or whatever they call their service. And yeah, there you go.
Metal Pigeon, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm very active on Twitter. I'm thinking of new ways to use Instagram. Not sure yet.
Seems like a difficult venue for somebody who deals in
words.
What I thought about doing was, because I have things I've written that I am really proud of, like little quotes or something where I'm like, yes, I encapsulated that idea perfectly there, and thinking about maybe like snippeting them.
That's a good idea.
And like putting them against the backdrop of whatever I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Or something.
That sounds good.
Throwing that, like that, just kind of get word of mouth going or something. Yeah. Yeah, that could be something. We'll see.
So you can find me at Red Viking Dave on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Check out my artwork and occasionally what I'm listening to and what beer I'm drinking. So
there you go. Whatever it is going to be brutal.
Exactly.
Brutal beer and brutal music. So thanks for tuning in to episode 135 of the Metal Geeks podcast. So as always, I have been one of your co-hosts, Carrie the Metal Geek, along with...
Brutal Dave.
I'm Sean the Metal Pigeon.
And as always, we'd like to say...
Keep it metal.
And...
Keep it geeky.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Geekazoids. Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.